Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Storm is coming. Our storm. And when it arrives, it will shake the universe.
Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you May 13th, 2018. Thank you so much for joining me here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please also check out RenegadeTribune.com, RenegadeVids.com, and HeathenHerbs.com. There are more sites I could plug, but that's it for now. Tonight I have a guest from the Emerald Isle, where most of my ancestors came from. So this is something that I always look forward to, speaking with an Irishman about the state of affairs over there. Unfortunately, there are not a whole lot of Irishmen or Irish women speaking up about the issues we cover here on Renegade Broadcasting. Hopefully, that will soon be changing. My guest tonight is Critiqued. He has a YouTube channel where he gets his thoughts out there, and a few of the videos he has put out I have featured over on Renegade Tribune, and they've gotten some good traction. One in particular about Sweden's Black Minister for Culture ordering Viking artifacts to be melted down and recycled, well, that got over 5,000 shares, I think something like 80,000 hits over on Renegade Tribune, so that one really got around. So the work that this man is doing is having an impact, and I'm glad I've been able to keep up with some of it. Critiqued, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hello, how are you doing? Yeah, that video, I did not realize that it had gotten around so much, but I was actually surprised that it didn't get a lot of views on the channel, because it's such a dreadful story about Sweden, about that Minister for Culture.
Oh yeah,
and what she's doing.
Well,
and
perhaps we can actually get to that a little bit later. First, let's hear just a little bit about yourself. You're just going with the name Critiqued. I'm sure that it's not very popular doing what you're doing in Ireland, and it could cause some troubles. So I understand completely. But you are showing your face to the world. And that is commendable. A lot of people do not, out of fear. So please just tell us a little bit about yourself, what it was like growing up in Ireland for you, how you've seen the country change, and then leading up to what ended up really waking you up, as it's called, and inspiring you to speak out.
Well, growing up in Ireland, I had a nice childhood. I grew up in a nice area. Everything was fine, homogenous, I suppose you could say. A lot of, like, we wouldn't have had, when I was going to school, we wouldn't have had any non-whites, really, in Ireland. Not very many at all. That started after the year 2000, and I finished in the late 90s. So I remember, this will tell you how alien it was to us when I was in primary school. The first Chinese takeaway that ever opened up in the town that I live in, the kid of those people that ran that takeaway, he came to the school, and on the first day, it was like everybody in the whole place was just surrounding this kid, just looking at him and trying to just ask him questions. And they were just amazed, like, to see this. This is something that they had never seen before. Somebody that looked different than everybody else. And I had a very nice childhood, very good. Surprisingly,
here in America, it wasn't that different for me. You'd think, oh, America's had blacks and others for hundreds of years. Well, they weren't shoved down our throats. They weren't bussed in. They weren't housed in with all of the affirmative action housing, the HUD, Section 8, things like that, the projects that they put up, so that there is complete integration. Things changed very, very quickly here. Can you talk about just how and when things started to shift?
Yeah, things started to shift here around the late 90s and the early 2000s when the economy started to pick up. And the government was all about telling everybody that we need these foreign workers. Since the free movement of people within the EU was a thing, that's how they started it, that we need these workers that can do the jobs that Irish people can't do, which is really a facade because Irish people are very well educated and most of them actually end up leaving here to get work because there isn't highly skilled jobs here for them. But it started in the early 2000s, and I started noticing a lot of Nigerians coming into the country around that time, even in the town I lived in. And I could tell you a story back then, which actually first put me onto race realism. This would have been back in 2004. I was renting a flat, and the people that were living next door to me were a family of Nigerians. And there were mostly women in that, but at the time, I was really naive to any of race, any stuff like that. But we were invited to a party, me and my friend, one night, and we went, and it was crazy. When we went in there, there was one guy sitting in the corner of the kitchen, and he was ostracized. And I remember asking one of the people, why is that guy over there looking so depressed? And they were here, oh, he's gay, he should not even be here. And we were like, yeah, that's weird, isn't it? I really have that just made it start grinding my gears. And then that night, I ended up, this is just a story, but that night I ended up actually falling out with somebody at that party. This guy started pushing his girlfriend around, she was pregnant, and I jumped in. And see, I was after drinking as well, and I don't know, I got knocked out in it and all that. So I, like, that switched me on to how different these people live, and just how different they are. They're very wild and uncivilized. I'm just going to be blunt about it. Uncivilized, not like us. I even made a video there recently about how they would come into shops, even to this day, and haggle over prices about things. And we don't do that. That's just not a dumb thing. You don't haggle about the price of milk or something like that. And that video got a lot of hits, but I had to take it down because of how YouTube are clamping down on everything. They're striking me about hate speech just for picture montages. This video would have had genuine what they would have classed as hate speech, so I had to take that one down. But yeah, that's when I first noticed things were really starting to change. And it was okay. It wasn't really ramped up during the 2000s. It's just, it really has gone beyond the beyond since this, since Angela Merkel gave that, the speech to say, bring them all in, let them in, and that's it, we have to let them in. And it's unbelievable that our government cannot curtail this in any way. They have to go by everything that the EU suggests, and they don't even seem to want to go against them, not even to argue, not even to make a point, like have hard negotiations, as I said. They just go along with everything. The way I see it is the NGOs are the ones that are actually running things here in this country, more so than our government, a lot more. Like, we have, I'll just say this, we have seven, imagine we have seven referendums coming up in the next 2 years. Seven. Apart from the abortion one that's on in a month's time, that's the big one, but we've got another six after that. And these are all little things that most people do not care about. Really what we want is a referendum on migration, but that's not on the cards.
Yeah. It wasn't here in the United States for the longest time. It wasn't even brought up at the debates. And then that all changed with this past election. I've talked about Trump and that whole thing ad nauseum. So I'm not going to get into that, but they really didn't even give us a choice on that one. They changed the immigration laws back in 1965, and then it was just it started with a pretty steady stream. It wasn't really ever a trickle. And then recently the dam just burst open, and it's just welcome one, welcome all. It's a free for all, and it's just never ending. And that it's not even just the legal immigration that's a problem. That's how everybody likes to frame it over here. It's all the legal immigration. And that seems to be the case in Ireland as well. Yeah, you're having to deal with refugees, but you're also dealing with all these people who came in through the correct channels and now consider themselves to be Irish citizens. And they're putting out all this propaganda about how all these foreigners, people who are Nigerian, who are even born in Nigeria, it's rude of you, it's racist of you, it's a hate crime for you to say that they're not Irish.
It's so crazy. I just try to label it. What is it? I always say it's cultural Marxism, because they talk about redefining things and redefining the look of the Irish and these sort of things, crazy stuff. But we don't have anything. I know it was good in America. I know the Trump phenomenon thing has passed now and all that, but it is good that he brought in the RAISE Act. Like, we don't have anything like that here, really. Anybody that lands in Ireland that is non-white cannot, if they say they are fleeing persecution, it doesn't matter where they're from or anything like that, they cannot be turned away. So we actually have a wide open border at the moment. People don't realize that. It's wide open, because once you can land here and claim asylum, that means everybody's headed here.
What's happening, though, at the same time, is that the young Irish people are not able to find work there. I've known many of them, especially because I came from Cape Cod, where a lot of them would come over to work. From Ireland, they would come over there, especially for the summers, and some of them would end up staying there because they're not able to find jobs back in Ireland. And this is all designed. They're sending the Irish out of Ireland and bringing in their so-called new Irish. It's sickening. This is genocide. This is ethnic cleansing.
It is. It's ethnocide. Well, genocide, yeah, it is. It's part of the global phenomenon of white genocide, and it's ethnocide of the Irish people. And this is used against us in another way. Like, they're able to turn this around as well and say, well, you have people that are going to this country and that country and everywhere, so why can't you let these people come into your country and become Irish? Like, as if it's just a piece of paper you need to sign, and that's it. Your blood changes, your DNA changes. That's how crazy it is. But, yeah, that is used against us, the fact that Irish people do leave the country in droves. Like, there's no point in saying it any other way. They leave in huge numbers, especially since 2008, when the financial crash happened, and in all the years since that, we go to all sorts of places like America and Australia and Canada. But then the NGOs and their lackeys, the people that talk up for them, are able to turn around and say, well, you have people that are gone all over the world. But as I always said, the people that are here never left, so you cannot burden us with that. We should not be told your people have left. The people that are here have never left.
And so, I'll tell you what, as compared to some other countries like Nigeria, most places in this world really do not complain about having the Irish come. The Irish are welcome and loved all around the world. Unlike another group that had a diaspora, they are not as well loved where they go. But the Irish, on the other hand, yes, often are welcome, very good, hard workers, and bring value to the community. Now, of course, there are the negative stereotypes about the Irish that have been going on for quite some time. I'm aware of all of them. And just the denigration of redheaded people, the redheaded stepchild and things like this. This is a program that's been going on for a long, long time. Because before there was such a thing as white genocide, there was the Irish genocide. So this is the people that was targeted first, where you've got things like the so-called famine. And I don't know how much you've looked into this, but I had Chris Fogarty on the show a few years ago, and his work really exposes what he calls the Irish Holocaust. And it actually was called that at the time in one of the newspapers, a Holocaust, because the Irish were being deliberately starved. There was plenty of food in Ireland. It was all being taken out with redcoats at their rifles.
Yeah, that is very true. It was being taken out, tons and tons. That famine, actually, it lasted only 5 years, but it decimated the Irish population. The population went from over 8 million down to just over 2, just under 3 million, like in the space of 5 to 6 years. And a lot of those people starve to death. I have read stories of people, like, imagine how badly off you would have to be. I have read about people who crawled on their hands and knees to soup kitchens to try and get some food. And these are places where you'd have been treated like dirt at the time. They were run by absentee landlords and English people, because Ireland was part of the empire at that time. But I suppose that probably is the first white genocide in a way. I'm trying to think here, is there anything?
Well, you could look at what was going on with the Roman conquest of the Celts and also the Germanic tribes. That could be considered one as well. And then continuing on with some of the actions of the Catholic Church, you could see that there was actually a genocidal hatred that was being fulfilled here. It wasn't just about theology. I think they often like to mask their genocidal agenda under different things, whether it's politics or wars for oil or whatever the case may be. They always want to kind of hide it, or human rights, protecting human rights. Or, human rights for refugees and all these other things. Well, we need to help out all of these other people at the expense of white people with their genocide, with their inevitable extinction, because they all gloat. They gloat in their own publications, these globalists and their lackeys. They gloat about how white people are going to be a minority in this area by 2040. And in this area, by 2050. They've got these dates that they've set where white people will no longer be the majority. And already in the Western world, most of the big cities of white countries, or formerly white countries, have been ethnically cleansed of whites. And you'll have a minority white population in them. But that's just deemed completely acceptable. That's progress. That's evolution. They always like to frame it in a positive light. Now, with Ireland, you've got this program, Ireland 2040. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about what this seems to be?
Yeah, this program was announced by our Prime Minister, you would call him. He's known as the Taoiseach here. It means the leader of the country. It was just announced out of the blue last February. Project Ireland 2040. It's framed as an investment into the country's infrastructure and, he said, into broadband for country towns and into housing and into health. That was the third thing, because I was thinking to myself when I heard it, that should be the number one thing before these other things, but because our health system is not great here. And in the actual clip, the Prime Minister said that the population is set to rise. It's predicted to rise by 1 million people in the next 20 years. And there was a lot of confusion about this at the time. People were, and myself as well, was thinking, where are these 1 million people going to come from in 20 years? They have to be nearly all migrants. But I have worked it out, and other people have since. And the Irish population, if the birth rate stays as it is now, which is 1.9, it's below replacement. Like, it's not good. If it stays at that, the most that the native population will grow in the next 20 years would be 500,000. So that means 500,000 of these people are going to be from all kinds of places and all kinds of cultures. And the way I see it now is, it's like, I don't think the government don't care where the people come from, as long as there are people there that are willing to spend and consume and keep the economy looks well, that's all they are interested in. They don't mind decimating the Irish people once the economy looks good. And that's how people are fooled a lot here. We're always told that, oh, the GDP is up and the economy's going well. And I was reading an article yesterday that said Ireland has bounced back from the financial crisis, and Ireland is looking bullish again. And all this just made up talk that really means nothing. It just means that they are bringing people in. But yeah, Ireland 2040, it's an investment project over the next 20 years. And really, when I look at it, all these investments are going to benefit mostly the people that are going to be important into the country, so that the migrants have good broadband, so that the migrants have good health and nice houses. And that's how I see it now, because these people are being put before Irish people. We have a social housing scheme in Ireland where if people who aren't working or whatever, single mothers and stuff like that, they can apply for social housing. But these people that have been brought into the country in the past year especially are been put ahead of all Irish people, all native people on all of these lists. It only came out last November about this. One county councillor in County Monaghan, he was told about it. He was told that we're going to be bringing in 30 asylum seekers and we want them to be housed before any of the people who are on the list in County Monaghan, the Irish natives. And he could not keep it in. He told, and fair play to him for telling. And after he told, and I think this was done on purpose, after he actually let slip, within about a month, I checked it on the internet, every Irish county newspaper, there's a newspaper for every county, had an article about bringing in refugees and migrants into each county. It's like, the way I see it is they were caught out by the councillor telling it all, and then they just came out and said it because they knew people were going to find out anyways. So I think Ireland 2040 is actually well on the way before it was even announced.
Just to make this point very clear, and I'm sure the listeners know, at least the regular listeners, this is a policy of clear discrimination based solely on one's ethnicity. This is racism by their own definitions, pure and simple. But because it is happening to the indigenous white population, we're supposed to think that this is something great, something loving. Racism equals love when it's done to white people. That's their kind of logic.
Yeah, they're saying you're very good people for taking these people in, and you're such virtue singers. And there's a lot of people in Ireland who actually think like that. Oh, how could we say no? There's a famous woman from Ballyhadreen. I made a video on it last year where she says, "How could I say no?" She hasn't a clue, this woman, God love her. She has not looked at any of the things that I have seen that has been going on in Sweden or that has been going on in France or anything like that. She's looking at Irish, we have two TV terrestrial stations here, and she's looking at that news, and that news will not show anything that is bad about the bad aspects of this mass migration. Any part of Europe, it will not go into it.
Now, you did a video on the crimes that are being committed in Ireland, and I hadn't really heard of these. We don't have really many sources talking about this. You might hear the crime reports out of Sweden or see this riot in France, but we haven't really gotten too much out of Ireland. Could you just go over briefly what you detailed in that video?
Yes, those are crimes. I was going through them by the years, and I was trying to emphasize how during the early 2000s, there was a lot of migrant crime, but it really ramped up as the years progressed because of more people coming into the country. I got a lot of those statistics from, there's a few people that actually keep tabs on these things, and well done to these people. One of them would be on Twitter there, Diversity Crimes Ireland. I got a lot of the stats from that page. And I looked up some of the things myself. I had been planning on making that video a couple of months. I talked about a Nigerian black guy down in Galway who was grooming a 14-year-old girl. That crime actually had just happened in the previous month. He had been sentenced to 2 years with the final year suspended, of course. So he'll end up doing a third of the actual year that he got if he behaves himself in there, which is pathetic. I noticed that as well. There seems to be one law for these migrants. The law is very mild when it's dealing with them compared to the native people.
Oh, yeah.
And that's it. There's a very big double standard there when it comes to that. And if these migrants come across an activist judge, as I've pointed out before, they're going to get away with it completely. Like a judge that has left-leaning views. That's it. You let them go.
In England, Pakistanis can... In England, Pakistanis can rape little girls with impunity, have them as sex slaves, and continue to do so. And the government does nothing. Well, we know who runs the government. It's child rapists and murderers as well. That's pretty much all out in the open now. But you've got this situation where they can get away with that. They're abusing children. That's perfectly fine. We can't police everybody, and this is a cultural misunderstanding. But if a white person, if the indigenous Brit is to post something that is seen as mean or offensive online, well, he can get raided by the police and brought to jail. Now, they just came out with these policy suggestions about, well, we might actually just imprison people for 6 months to a year for so-called hate posts. And this is whatever they deem to be hateful. This bureaucratic beast isn't going to define hate. It's going to be very ambiguous. So it is really only ever applied against the indigenous white people. So you can get thrown in jail for a year because you offended that guy who's raping the little children over there. Sick. This is, and people put up with it. Where's our backbone? What has happened? We talk about it here in America. We see what's happening over in Britain. What happened to the Irish? Where's that resistance? Yes, the Irish people have been through so much in the past, but still, think about the days of the IRA, and that's a whole other story. But there was this idea that the Irish people should be in control of their lands. How are they willing to accept this invasion?
I think it's the people themselves. I don't know. I don't think they are willing to accept it. It's just that a lot of people seen this as a good thing during the 2000s when, as I said earlier, that it wasn't as bad. It was just you would see the odd foreigner here and there, and that was sort of okay. It was nearly a time when people would have said that's actually all right. But people were so naive to it. But see, it has happened so quickly now that so many of them have come here. People's heads, I think, are spinning. And even the guys who would have been the resistance that you talked about there, I just think they are trying to, they are gathering their bearings and just seeing what they actually are going to, what they're going to do or think, or what they think about this. Because the party that a lot of those people would follow, Sinn Féin, is actually pro-open borders.
Oh, yeah.
So it conflicts with their beliefs. So, but they have to realize now that it's gone too far, that something has to be done. People need to just, even if they say something, like the spoken word, I mean, it's so much more powerful than somebody writing a little comment on Twitter or something. You know, people have to realize that. But I was just thinking there when you were talking about people in England can't even speak about it, that actually goes against the UN definition for freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And I don't know why they don't. They should be able to fight it in the courts using that.
Yeah, you'd think. It's a judicial system that is not for us. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit. Ever gives us one side of World War II. They don't want us to know the real history of what happened over 70 years ago, seeing through the eyes of the German victims. The horror of the terror bombing, the mass rape of millions of women and children, the torture and murder of civilians, the death camps for surrendered soldiers, the ethnic cleansing of whole countries, and the planned extermination of the entirety of the German people. After watching Hellstorm, you'll never see the good war and the good guys in the same light ever again. Watch for free and get DVDs at hellstormdocumentary.com.
Tag um Tag, Jahr um Jahr, wenn ich durch diese Straßen geh, seh ich, wie die Ruinen dieser Stadt wieder zu Häusern auferstehen. Doch bleiben viele Fenster leer, für viele gab es keine Wiederkehr. Und über das, was grad noch war, spricht man heute lieber gar nicht mehr. Doch ich frag.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. Tonight my guest is Critiqued. He is from Ireland and he has a YouTube channel you can check out. We are talking currently about the foreign occupation of Ireland, the invasion. And this goes all the way to the top now, doesn't it? Very symbolically with your new King Leo, Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, who is a homosexual Indian. He is now the head statesman for Ireland. Ridiculous. What are your thoughts on this?
Not a good look.
Yeah.
Embarrassment. Well, it's not a good look. He was not really elected by the people. He was elected by the party as the leader, and because his party are the party that are in power, he became the de facto leader of the country. But then, he just seems to just go along with everything that is said to him by the EU. Doesn't seem to have any resistance to any of this, and he has called himself before a civic nationalist. He has used those words, so he's aware of the little conflicts that are going on. Of course, he is. But you were saying to me earlier there about where the Irish resistance has gone. A lot of people are guilted by these. There's a great phrase that a YouTuber uses called mean pathogens, and it actually explains them perfectly. It's calling people racist and stuff like that. There's a town in Ireland called Listowel-Varna. It's a heritage town, and they have a festival going back over 150 years where matchmaking used to go on. At this festival, it still goes on to this day, this festival. I don't know what it'll be like this year because they're after bringing a lot of asylum seekers into that village, which only has 300 people, and they're after putting them up in one of the nicest hotels. And I'll just say this, one of the crazy things is 7 of them have absconded, even though they're supposed to be fleeing war or whatever. And we know that's all BS. None of them are fleeing. Only 1 in 10 is fleeing war. But the people had a vote, the actual Irish people, before this a centre was opened a month ago, and 93% of them voted against it, and they were completely ignored, completely. So that's how that gives me a snapshot that the Irish people are completely against this. If they are been honest, like had a ballot box, and they just need to bring that honesty out and out through their mouths and say it. That's what I'm always saying to them in my videos and stuff like that. If you have a YouTube account, use it. Say how you feel. If you have an opinion on this, you should really speak up, because to these politicians like Leo Varadkar, once you're silent, that's consent to him, and that's the way he sees that. Everything's fine, nobody's saying anything, but people are thinking things and they're not happy about it. That vote shows that. But as I said, it was ignored. At least we have a little bit of freedom of speech here. That's why I'm saying people should do it before it runs out, before it gets to the stage where did you see where the political party in England, Britain First, were showing? They were showing a takeaway where a young girl got raped, showing the public to be careful of this place, and they actually got sent to prison for. Disturbing the peace or invading the privacy of the Muslims who are running this place, which is so ridiculous. Like, I don't think that would happen here. If this happened to a girl in a takeaway here and it was exposed by people, I'm fully sure they would not get jailed for it. But that's why I'd be worried, because if it gets to that extent here, it will lead to, and I hate to say it, but it will lead to a war, more or less a war.
Yeah, and could very well be what they're looking for. Now, I wanted to bring this up. Heathen Vegan in the chat, he is posting a document from IBEC.ie, and it's a leaked report that shows the true number of the population increase is 5 million people. And since Ireland is under 5 million at the moment, this project aims to increase it to 10 million. He says the guidelines mimic very nicely the Ireland 2040 infrastructure plans.
Yeah. I would believe that document, definitely. I was actually just listening to a European politician the other day. No, I can't think of her name, but I know she is from Israel originally. And she was saying, when I hear her, I'm thinking to myself, the cheek of this woman to be saying this. She's saying that where I come from, she said, the Palestinian territory is a quarter the size of Ireland, and they have 10 million people. 10 million people, she said. And Ireland has only 4.8 million, and it is four times the size. So she said, there's huge room there for manoeuvre with the population. And I'm thinking to myself, is she talking about, like, a, what, 40 or 50 million people or something? And who is she even to say this? That's a, another thing I'd be thinking. Who is she to say this? A woman that's
chosen
from here.
She's chosen to do so. And I'm sure Israel would be willing to help pick up some Africans out of the Mediterranean and ship them right up to Ireland.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. They definitely would.
We had
a chosen one, and he'd done a lot of damage here. I'll talk about him in a minute if you want. Alan Shatter, you might have heard of him before.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring him up, actually. I always found this fascinating that this Jewish man was both, at the same time, Minister for Justice and Equality and Minister for Defense at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time. That is the truth, yeah. And that was a ridiculous thing. The Minister for Equality, that's just a joke. I don't know. That should not even be a post. The Minister for Defense is, it's not really much of one either, because Irish soldiers just go on peacekeeping missions. That's all, because we are a neutral country. But he actually had to step down in the end because of a scandal that went on with the police here, where he wouldn't pass on information that was passed on to him about certain police that were, there was whistleblowers that were seeing things going on that weren't right. People were getting away with all these different things like speeding fines and stuff like that if they knew the police. And this was passed on to him, and he never looked into it or anything. So he had to step down and resign, and thank heavens for that, because he had done, like, it's only after I realized the damage he had done, you see, because during the 2000s, as I said, like, when the migration in Ireland wasn't too bad, he brought in this thing, he lobbied hard for this thing, these citizen ceremonies that are going on here since 2011. And all of a sudden, between that time and now, there's after being over 100,000, mostly Nigerians and Africans of all sorts, have been sworn in as Irish citizens. And, of course, people from the UAE and people like that woman I spoke in the video, and now she's trying to redefine the look of the people who gave her a passport when that woman, yeah, when the country she grew up in wouldn't give her the time of day. So it's crazy, but yeah, he is to blame for a lot of that. And it just, they always seem to be these chosen ones. They're always involved in political movements that change things radically. I've noticed that no matter where they are. They always seem to be involved. Now, we're lucky we don't have any other ones that are there at the moment that are doing anything. But if they do get elected, we'll have to keep an eye on them, because they really are lethal. Some of them can be. And I've been straight about that because it's the truth. They are. Some of them can, definitely. But it's not. Some people would say that's a conspiracy theory, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a potential fact.
I wanted to bring up resistance to this again, just because I had been following what this group Phoenix Rising was doing. They were essentially just doing graffiti messages, spray painting over overpasses, or one of these citizen ceremony centers, or something to do with bringing these immigrants in. They had spray painted an overpass right by that, the Irish population replacement. Or, you know, they're doing things like writing about your, you know, Irish blood is on your hands, being very upfront that they see this as a genocide of the Irish people and that it needs to be opposed. However, I haven't really seen anything from them since. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention. But if there's anything you would tell me about this group, if it just completely disappeared, if they were disbanded somehow, they were infiltrated, anything to add about?
I'm not too sure. There's Generation Identity in Ireland, and there's another group called Generation Sparta. What was the name of that group?
Phoenix Rising.
Phoenix Rises.
Rising.
I'm not sure, to be honest, where they have went and has happened to them.
Yeah, what,
maybe
what,
they have actually changed into the Identity Ireland. I'd say most of the same people.
It might be some of the same people who are doing that. I wanted to see what other groups there are. I from time to time seen things about new political parties forming, some people opposing this. Has anything gone anywhere or gotten any kind of mainstream attention, or has it been pretty quiet?
it's been pretty quiet, to be honest. We have a new party that formed about 18 months ago, the National Party. But a lot of people, it's the same as what I when I said to them to try and speak your mind. A lot of people don't want to be, they don't want it to be known in public that they are, that they don't want this migration. You see, it's this thing that they have in their heads that I don't want to be seen as a racist. Now, I think a lot of people who would be members of that party would not care if they were called any of those names. But it's just that there aren't a huge amount of people who think like that, who really would not care. The same as myself, I wouldn't care either. But yeah, hopefully that party will grow. But as I said before, I don't think it, there will be big changes until people actually, until it actually affects people's daily lives. You see, what keeps a lot of Irish people, the reasons they are so docile in a way is that we are constantly being told about the great economy and how it's performing. And this is what keeps people happy in a way, that they can not really tune into this stuff. They can just say to themselves, ah, no, that's just far-right talk or whatever. I've got these comments on videos. Oh, you're just a far-right racist and all this. And I'd say back, why? Because I care about my own people. And they wouldn't have an answer to that. They'd just disappear then. But, yeah, so it's hard to know. But I think when it affects people, I hate to say this, but I really think when it affects them financially, that's when you will see a serious backlash to this. But they're trying, you see, to make sure that that does not happen by constantly talking up the economy. And it's all about the economy of the government, everything. And they do not care about what people are propping up this economy. It doesn't matter to them if they're Nigerians or if they're Afghanis or Iraqis or wherever. Very few of them are actually genuine Syrians, to be honest about it. But, see, so I think when, like the people of Listunvarna, they have got a rude awakening, unfortunately. But when it comes to other people's towns, we have 35, these are called direct provision centres, like what was set up in that village, Listunvarna, all around Ireland. And I think when it comes to people's neighbourhoods and it affects them somewhere, then we're going to see some sort of a resistance. But until then, I don't know. There just does not seem to be too many people that will voice their opinions openly, like the way I do. And I said to them, what have you got to lose? We're already losing our country. We're already losing our people. You know, and we have been predicted to become a minority here by 2050. What more do you need to get out and actually say something about this? And, you know, like I've seen the, did you ever see the little cartoon before? It goes, the little girl is saying to the father, what did you do during this great replacement? And he says, well, honey, I just made sure I wasn't called a racist. That actually rings true to a large extent.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pity. It's a terrible pity. But, yeah, they're constantly being told that if you refuse this, you're going against Irish values. Irish values is all about migration, because Irish people have always migrated. And so it's only fair that we let these people in here. And I wouldn't mind if they were genuinely fleeing war or if they were families, but they are absolutely all single men, and they're all under 30. Like,
you mean if it was temporary? You mean if it was a temporary asylum?
Yeah.
That you had places set up, not that they were trying to integrate them into all these different small Irish villages.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. If it was a temporary asylum, and as soon as, because as I've said before, Syria is in rack and ruin. Who is going to build this up? Do they expect Irish builders like to go over there? I'm a bricklayer myself, but to go over there and build up these buildings, it's going to take bricklayers and plasterers and people like that who are going to have to do this. And it should be them people themselves who came from there. But they seem to be settling in here so comfortably, I can't see them moving. And nobody is saying that they even have to move. We were told that at the start, though. Actually, we were so hoodwinked into this. Like, first it was the free movement of people within the EU, which was fine. And then we were told last year, we're only taking 4,000 people to help out the Syrian conflict. 4,000. And that has jumped to, to Ireland, when he announced Ireland 2040, it's jumped from 4,000 to 500,000 in the next 20 years. So, it's like the boiling frog analogy, slowly. And that's how I see it. And when it gets to a certain degree, I think there will be, I'm hoping that there will be a backlash and a resistance, and it will be made a mainstream political issue. That's where we have to get this now, instead of having it like a underground. People think it's an Alex Jones sort of conspiracy theory thing, and it's not like that at all. But I think more people are starting to realize that the vote and listing environment definitely showed that, that people are aware of the dangers of this. They don't want it. They definitely don't want it. They just need to speak it. That's all it is.
Yeah.
They need to say it straight out.
And it's very...
Not be apologetic.
Very weak justification for Irish guilt or white guilt. Here in the United States, they use all sorts of different tactics to browbeat us. Slavery, which, well, if you look up who brought the slaves to America, you'll find out there were a lot of Jewish slave traders, and they're the ones writing the movies about all these evil white slaves when most white people did not own slaves in the United States. The vast majority, almost 99% at the height of slavery, did not own slaves, and many white people were actually, especially Irish, were brought here as slaves, but we don't hear anything about that. But over there in Ireland, very weak excuse as to why you need to be genocided. Well, because you've left your country, so you've got to allow people to come into yours. Oh, it only makes sense. It's just the logic that they use to justify this genocide can be pretty absurd at times. Now, I want to see what the state of the media programming is. And I mean, you look over at some of the British media where they're telling these different tales from, you know, kind of like a History Channel type of show or some of these epic Arthurian legends. They're replacing all of these important characters with Africans, Arabs in England in, you know, back before there were even Arabs, you know, before there were Muslims. You know, so they've got all of this absolutely ridiculous crap going on where they're trying to write the indigenous people out of their history and replace them with diversity and enrichment, as they call it. Yeah, are they doing the same thing over there in Ireland? I've only caught one example of this, which was the story of Cú Chulainn on TV, this great Irish hero, and he was played by an African. Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
It was kind of a dance production that was broadcast out on one of the Irish TV channels.
I missed that. I was just going to say, no, not to the same extent. I've seen those these cartoons and stuff in England, and it's a lot of it is cartoons where they show different people like King Arthur was a man of color, and like to me and you, that's. We would probably laugh at that, but the thing is, this is lethal dangerous. Of course, we would not laugh at it. It's just it's funny how stupid it is. That's what I mean. But to the kids that are growing up now, this is poisoning their minds, and especially there at Christmas, we have some of the English channels here, and we see the English advertisements, the British ones, and every ad was miscegenation, had a white girl and a black man, and. Of course, we know that's part of the white genocide agenda to breed white people into a coffee-coloured mix, but not to the same extent is it going on here with the TV propaganda. TV would be more inclined to push the pro-EU propaganda here, which is the same thing, just indirectly. It's not as direct. So, like they would say, it's great to be in the EU because it has helped us out so much and it has stopped wars the past 70 years in Europe. I've spoken to people about this, like intellectuals and stuff, and that's what they would say back to me. I would say the EU now, we are net contributors since 2015. And as far as I'm concerned, we don't owe the EU anything. We joined this to help our economy grow, and that was what it was for. Now it's been turned into a complete... It's changing demographics. That's all it seems to be interested in now. But... So people will come back to me and say, well, it has stopped the wars and it has kept things peaceful. And I don't think there's a lot of things that are more important than that. It is great that there has been no wars and stuff, but Irish TV, yeah, it's just really pro-EU. And it was funny there in St. Patrick's Day on the 17th of March, just gone by, I was looking at the parade in Dublin and I couldn't believe it. At the ad break, it just, for no reason, and it wasn't explained, just before it went to the advertisements, it showed a still of a black man, like a jet black man with a shamrock in his hand and a big smile on his face. And then they went to the advertisements, and I was looking at that center and said, are they trying to rub it in or what? Because that's what it really looked like. There was no need to put this person who represents less than 3% of the population in an advert on St. Patrick's Day. And even the theme of the parade was, you would think it was a nice theme. I thought of it when I heard it first, it was home is where the heart is, but it was actually home is in your heart. And they're trying to say that these people that are coming to Ireland now are bringing their homes and their heart, and we have to admire them for that. And they're such good people, the horrible journeys they've made and all of this. And it's very hard for some Irish people to turn around and say, no, which is what I would say. It doesn't matter what journeys they made. They should stay. And especially if they're the way they say, oh, we're taking the intelligent people, it's going to be good for our economy. No, the intelligent people need to stay in their countries and help their countries become better places. Because if everybody tries to move to the richer countries, there's going to be nobody. The richer countries, for a start, are going to turn into dives, and there's going to be nobody left to run these other countries where the people have come from. They're going to turn into worse places than they already are. So, it's hard. It's hard to argue when they turn around and say that. For the average person to on the spot to argue against it, when they say, how could you turn away these poor people and all this? Like, I would just turn around and say, no, we cannot change our demographics. We have already been, it's already been predicted by a professor in Dublin City University that we are to become a minority here. We need to incentivize the Irish people to have more children. And that is actually a big problem here at the moment. Mm-hmm. Having a lot less kids than we were in the 90s, even. In the 90s and the 80s, it was 4 per couple, and that's gone down to 1.9. So, that's used against us as well, of course.
Right.
It's always said you have an aging population, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that comes through the media as well. But as regards showing Irish legends like Cú Chulainn and stuff as people of colour, I haven't seen much of that. I haven't seen the one you have spoke about there, but I'm definitely going to look that up, because I can't believe that, actually. That is just nuts to me.
Yeah, it's from some years ago. I think I might have posted about it on the Tribune. Yeah, so you've got a lot of things being promoted on the TV. You said especially the EU, and I know in Ireland it took, what, 3 different votes? Because 2 instances, the first 2 times when Ireland was questioning whether or not to join the EU, saying, no, we don't want this. And then again, no, we don't want this. And then the third time, and they spent a whole lot of money and probably rigged the vote, Ireland finally decided to join.
Yes, that's true. It was actually the second time Ireland decided to join. This is the Lisbon and the Nice treaties back in the mid-2000s. Now, we had joined the EEC in 1972, of course, and that was fine and granted and perfect. But this was to these treaties were worded in such highfalutin language, especially the first treaty. I'm not sure which came first, whether it was the Nice or the Lisbon, but it was voted against. And all they really did was changed a few of the words around. And this was to give the EU, of course, more power over our national government. And they changed a few words around. And within a year, and during that year, the media absolutely hyped it up. They really turned it up. This is what I thought was going to happen in England with Brexit, but it hasn't yet. But what happened was they thought, it just kept saying on the media that we're going to be set back 30 years if we don't join this. Why would Ireland want to be left out on the side of Europe? We'll be back dependent on Britain to sell our goods, and then they can buy them cheaply if they want, because they'll know that we're dependent on them, and we're better off being in the union. And no matter what the cost is to the people, obviously they didn't say that, but that's what it meant. We should be in this union for economics. It comes back to economics. That's the be and end all, as far as our government is concerned, is how the economy is looking. And once that's looking good, they think they're doing a great job. But no, they're not. And that referendum, the second one, it just barely scraped by the second time. It was something like 53% of people. I think it was mostly out of fear of the unknown, because we had been in the EU for almost like 30 years at that time, and things have been going well. But it's only after that treaty is when the migration and the demographic change actually started to be ramped up. And now it's, in hindsight, I can see that this is what this was. We were signing away our ability to say no to these ridiculous migrant quotas. And now our government has actually okayed chain migration into Ireland, which will mean that each of these people that come here, you know yourself, you have that in America too, don't you, chain migration, where they can bring 30. And I've heard of cases where some people have actually tried to bring 70 people. Family members, in quotations, family members to Ireland. Oh, of course, our authorities have no way of checking if these are genuine family members and or what they are.
You talked about birth rates. Well, what happens is they bring in all their relatives, and oftentimes this is a harem. This is a group of wives, and each of them is going to have several children by the same man. And this spells the end of the indigenous rule of that country. Well, I'd argue that we actually haven't been ruled by our own for quite some time, but we've at least been able to live amongst our own. Now that is all being threatened, and that has changed very, very quickly, where they have moved into this new multicultural mode, as Barbara Spector has said, where just even speaking any kind of dissension against this genocidal agenda, and you are a heretic. You are unemployable. You are the most evil thing ever because you are a racist. And that is far worse than being a rapist, as we have seen and shown, as the judicial system has declared in many countries. It is a very, very tough situation when your whole government structure appears to be working against you, and that there are no allies, because there are no governments in the world who are willing to really stand up for our interests. There are some that have closed down their borders somewhat, or should I say are allowed to close down their borders somewhat. Different allies. That's the way I see Orbán in Hungary, because he's best buddies with Bibi. Somehow a deal was reached there where that country wasn't the one of the ones to be targeted, at least not at this time. There were targeted countries. And we'll be back in just a little bit, so stay tuned, everyone. We'll open up the call lines, too, in the last half hour.
Most of you are already aware that the sick freaks ruling our world are engaged in some of the most horrific crimes against children imaginable. This dark and depraved underground is something any healthy person would not even want to consider. But we must investigate their operations and expose these criminals to the light of day so that justice might be done. The recent Pizzagate revelations are just the tip of a massive iceberg. Watch The Big Picture, Pizzagate and Beyond. Learn the terrifying truth at beyondpizzagate.com.
Oh, You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, and my guest tonight is Critiqued from YouTube. Now, Critiqued, before the break, we were talking a bit about media mind control, and you had, well, critiqued a video from a TEDx presentation where this mixed woman was talking about redefining Irish identity. Do you want to discuss this just a little bit?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind discussing that. That video still bugs me to this day. I made the original video about a year ago. As soon as I noticed this TED Talk, somebody told me about it. And I noticed this TED Talk had been uploaded something like 7 months previously before the first comment came on. So I'm assuming that it was kept on private on YouTube until actually there was a lot more migrants in the country. And then it was made public so that it's all about conditioning the people to accepting this stuff. So this woman who is from the United Arab Emirates, she had Palestinian parents. She grew up there for 20 years in the United Arab Emirates, and she said it very quickly in this TED Talk that they do not give passports to people unless both of your parents are nationals of that country. And I said to myself straight away, that is a policy that I would love if we would implement here, but unfortunately it's very far from that. But yeah, the talk started off nice. She said how she came to Ireland and she had a chance to start a new life and a family, and it all seemed very nice. And then around the 6th minute of it, she says, "Now, folks, the reason I'm here is really because everywhere I go," she said, "at least once a week, people said to me," and she put on this Irish accent, she says, "Where are you from?" She said, people said this to her. And she says, "I'm Irish." And they said to her, she says, there's an inevitable question coming. "Yeah, but where are you really from?" Which is, the Irish people are just asking, like, what ethnicity are you? Because she does not look Irish. She is Middle Eastern. So she was saying in this video that this is the question that this TED Talk is about. She said that the question of where are you really from stems from a mindset that is that associates the Irish people as being a monochromatic people. And she was saying that this is an outdated look. It's not really what Irish people are anymore. Irish people come in all colours and in all different ethnicities. Anybody can be Irish is what she was trying to say. And she was trying to say that she was very offended by people asking her where she really came from. Now, this woman, you have to understand, like she said herself, she came from the United Arab Emirates, where they would not even give her a passport. And she came to this country where she was taken in, given a passport. She gets, if she's a citizen now, she gets all the benefits that citizens get, like subsidized healthcare and children's allowance for all her children and all this. And I just think she has such a cheek to turn around then and try to redefine what the people look like and try to tell us how we should see other Irish people. She even said, and it sounds so ridiculous when you listen to it a couple of times, she said, "If you see somebody that's like me or even a little bit darker, don't assume that they're not Irish," she said. "Just affirm that they're Irish and believe that, and just go up and ask them, go up and say to them, I can see that you're Irish, but I'd like to ask you about your heritage." And I don't see what's the difference in asking them that and saying, what ethnicity are you? Or where have you come from? Because obviously you're not Irish. That would be the thing that I would see when I see somebody like this. I would not be thinking what she said. I can see that you're Irish. I would be thinking, I can see that you are not Irish. Yeah, I actually, that video really bugged me. And when I made my first response, I didn't hold back on that woman, not one bit. But the video got re-edited by somebody else who done a very, very good job on it. And that's why I republished that re-edited version just there a month ago. And people seem to like it. Now, her original TEDx talk is still there on TED, but she has disabled the comments because I seen the comments just before they were disabled. There was about 500 comments of people, just everyone disagreeing with her. And people that weren't even cursing at her were just saying to her, like, how can you come in here and try to do this? Like, do you not feel any guilt or shame? And I was even saying to in a comment, like, do you not feel bad for your kids that they're going to look back and see how cheeky and how ungrateful you are and how ungrateful you come across in this video? And no, she seems to not really care. The video has something like 600 downvotes and 30 upvotes, and it's still there. It's still there. She's still persisting with leaving it up. And I would like to see that really taken down, because that is taking the piss big time, trying to do that. That's one of the worst things I've seen in recent times, actually, is her TEDx talk. I was just wondering as well, is that sanctioned by TED or is TEDx? It always says it's an independently organized thing. So I've often wondered, can anybody rent out this TED setup and just spew whatever they want?
I'm guessing not. I think that's kind of an excuse. It seems to be, oh, it's always the same logo. I don't think it's just a kind of grassroots thing, but maybe. I don't know. I think it's just a way for the TED organization to distance themselves from some of these talks. I really don't know, but that's a good question. I was wondering how you're holding up with your YouTube channel and if you've had videos taken down, because you've got the situation where they don't want us to have any kind of rebuttal. They don't want us to have any kind of voice, because we've been very successful at actually debating them, taking their points and going one by one and deconstructing them and really just exposing them for what they are and what they're doing. Yeah. So they are very threatened by that. They only want this to be a one-sided conversation where they are speaking directly to us as little children who need to take instructions, or rather indoctrination. So us being actually able to have a voice like we used to have on platforms like YouTube is very important. So what's the situation with you? Are you concerned that you might no longer have this venue available?
I do often think that, yeah, and you explained it perfectly there. That's exactly what they think. They want, it's all one-sided. They do not want anybody talking back, because we can deconstruct their weak arguments about white guilt and stuff. But yeah, I have gotten one of my videos struck down completely off of YouTube. It was just a video with pictures that I had taken from Google images of different globalists, and actually that Irish politician I was talking about, Alan Shatter, he was in there, and some of our other politicians who are going along with all this stuff. And I had written in some things like there was a black woman who was wearing something, it looked like traditional Irish dancing dress, and I wrote in the writing on the video, "This is Irish now, LOL," which is not really, I don't think that should have been too offensive, but it got struck down for hate speech. And the funny thing about it is I did not even speak once in this video. It had this, I used the song Metallica, Blackened, off on Justice for All album, because I was using that. I was thinking of the analogy, like Ireland is being blackened by this black, when I think of the Killarney fan and stuff like that, this black gene pool that's been brought in here. So that's the reason I used that tune. And they took the video completely down. They just said it was hate speech. They didn't put it in limited state. They just completely removed it. And I have got other strikes for copyright, a lot of copyright strikes. And I noticed they have been coming in a lot more recently. I think it's because of the adpocalypse. A lot of people are feeling that who would have been making good money off YouTube. And they are actually copyright striking every little thing. Even my second or third last video, which was about Ireland joining the EU, that got 3 copyright strikes, and it's only 5 minutes, 2 for the music and 1 for one of the scenes where Ireland signs up to the EEC in 1972, which is 40-year-old footage, like, and I get a copyright strike for that.
Yeah.
And then YouTube emailed me and said, we're demonetizing the channel now because you have got so many copyright strikes and you can reapply in the middle of May, which I'm not going to bother to do because I never collected anything from AdSense ever. Anyways, my videos would not like get that amount of views. So that did not bother me about being demonetized. But I do have a feeling that it might not last much longer because now that YouTube is on, it's preloaded onto every Android phone and every iPhone, every smartphone. They know that people can access these arguments that we are making against this globalization. And they don't want, as you said, they don't want any traffic going the other way. They want it all one way. And I have created a Minds account and a Gab account, but it does not get near the same traffic, especially Gab. Nobody watches the videos hardly there. Now, Minds, I think I have something like 15,000 views altogether, but Minds is a little bit better. But YouTube is where the crowd is, and they know that. And that's why I think they will. That they're clamping down a lot on people who are going against this agenda.
Yeah, and even if you try to beat around the bush, you might be able to last a little bit longer. But if you openly call out, let's say, the Jewish mafia, you're not going to last long because, and if you're doing it in an effective way, because all of these organizations, YouTube, which is owned by Google, and just think about how much control that is, Facebook, Twitter, and Microsoft, they've all joined in with the ADL, who now has a location out in Silicon Valley and is embedded with all these companies. They're now in charge of policing what is and what is not hate. Not just here in America, but for everyone around the world.
And that's open to interpretation. Like, it's so vague, this hate, you know. As I said, that video that was struck down, I didn't even speak once in it. It was just a montage of photographs with little bits of writing that I put in here and there. Now, the video is on Minds and on Gab. It's called Blackened Ireland. But, they just struck that down as hate speech, even though there's no speak whatsoever. I think the channel might not last much longer. I don't know, but as you said, there is no point in beating around the bush because they're going to come for you eventually anyways. So while we have, as I said, the freedom of speech here, that we can say these things without much consequences, if you were working for a company, say like Intel or something like that, I'd say there would be consequences if they found out. Of course there would. But as regards the police or the law, no, there's not. We have freedom of speech. We can say these things at the moment, as long as we're not inciting violence. But YouTube guidelines are different, of course, to the law of the country.
Yeah.
But,
and that's what I'm saying. Out there in Silicon Valley, in the headquarters, in the belly of this digital beast, the ADL is calling the shots, defining what is hate. That is a very Orwellian, scary proposition. Especially when you consider how many minds these different tech giants are able to mold.
Yeah, that's it. And that's why it's such a powerful position they have. But the ADL, and they have these the trusted flaggers now is a thing. And sure, that could be anybody. That could be anybody with any sort of opinion that doesn't agree with something you're saying. And they can flag your video down, and they're trusted flaggers. I don't know what criteria they have to meet to become trusted, but I wouldn't say it's much. Once they have probably left-leaning views, they would be trusted to flag videos like mine.
Yeah, back when we were doing more on YouTube, there was a commenter, and this was our channel, who we could not block. We could not delete their comments, and they would just spew them. Maybe we were able to delete their comments, but then they would just post 10 more. So it was either a bot or somebody doing a lot of meth and getting paid by some Hasbro agency. But he would just say the most vile things ever. And this appears to be a YouTube super account saying vile, nasty things about us, threatening us, all sorts of garbage coming from this YouTube approved, basically, admin. It seemed to have admin privileges there. Very, very scary. It's not scary. We need to realize that these people are actually acting out of desperation. They are the ones who are scared. But we're operating in enemy territory when we're using social media. And that's why I've basically confined us to the various sites that we run and don't spend a whole lot of time with the social media, because they just take it away from you like that, like they did with my 10,000 follower Twitter account a while ago.
Oh yeah, Twitter is really bad for that sort of stuff. Yeah, you were right, and I have thought about that myself. I'm threatening to do it, as I said to you earlier, to start up a website and try and be free of YouTube. But it's just trying to get the people to migrate from YouTube to that area then to listen to you is sort of difficult. Most people, just for the easy, for the handiness, again, like, of course, they would rather just log into YouTube and listen. Now, I would have no problem starting up another channel if my channel got shut down, and starting up and just making the same sort of videos, highlighting the same similar things, except new things that are happening now, like, if that happens. But we'll see, like, how it goes. I've already started up a second channel for live streaming, because at the moment I can't even stream on the first one, because of that video that got struck down. I've one strike, so I'm on a 3 month I'm in the gulag for 3 months. I can't even stream. So I don't know whether I should just leave it or create 3 or 4 channels and just keep uploading to YouTube and just keep putting it up to them. As you said, we definitely are in enemy territory when we're on that site.
Here's my advice: is you do it all. So you get a website going. That, I think that's crucial, so that you can have a place that you advertise in all your videos, where you say, listen, if I get taken down, you don't know where to find me, come here. And what you then can do is upload your videos somewhere else that might not get a whole lot of traffic generally, like a BitChute, and then embed those videos into your website. Or you could mix it up, whatever the case may be. But make sure that you're hosting of it is secure, that where your domain name is secure, not GoDaddy, where they'll just snatch it. There are better options there, but it is very difficult. They have established the precedent of just tearing things away from people who have opinions they don't like, who haven't done anything illegal, but just who have dangerous opinions, and that is. Yeah, that is where we are right now. And if they can't get you that way, they'll attack you however they can. But I'm of the mindset that you just need to keep powering on regardless, jumping over all of the hurdles. They will come. It is not an easy ride. It is not always smooth sailing, but we can't stop now. You've got to keep going. And unfortunately, a lot of people do pull out, and they are no longer heard from again, or some of them unfortunately turn and they start spouting the opposite kind of line that they used to hold. It's a minefield. It really is a minefield working in this kind of alternative media realm.
It is, and I would agree with you, just power on and jump through any hurdles, because this is like, to me now, this is everything. The invasion of this country, it is on my mind most of the time, and if I'm not thinking about it directly, it's in the back of my mind. So there's no way that I would be able to close down and just not talk about these things anymore. I would crack up, really, to be honest about it. So I could not do that. I would definitely jump through the hurdles and jump through the hoops and keep going and keep it going, as you said. That's the way I look at it myself. But you, even with the website, you still sort of are at the mercy of Google in a way, aren't you? Like, we've seen what they did to, was it Storm?
Yeah, they took down Stormfront for a while. There have been a number of different sites that have been taken out. It sounded like he kind of cut out there. Let me see. No, he's still okay. Are you still there, Critiqued? Not hearing him anymore. Okay, what we will do here is I'll walk the conference. Somebody was trying to get in, and I'm going to drop you here critiqued. If you can hear me, just come back in once I drop you from this call. Send him a message on Twitter as well. Try to get this show back on the road. Everything looks pretty good on my end. Oh, no. No, apparently it doesn't. Looks like the streaming server got disconnected. So maybe I have to connect back into the call as well. You will still be hearing me in the archive. Oh, I wish we didn't have to deal with these kinds of problems, but we do sometimes. It's not always smooth sailing, as I said, but we need to keep pressing on. Let's try to get in here. Well, this is stupid. Try one more time. Well, I guess I'll try it as many times as it takes until I can get back in here. I don't want to play the standby music, because ideally this will just work. I'm going to open it up in a new browser. Try doing it that way. This is not the ideal studio computer, to be honest. It should be running on a better machine, so it takes a little time to do these things. I'm going to try Firefox here, see if I could connect in that way. Well, we tonight have been talking about the dispossession of not only the Irish people, but, well, all of us, those targeted for extermination at the hands of our greatest ally. And here we go, Firefox did open up. I haven't used this in a long time. I don't want to go off on too any real tangents. Oh, it crashed. That's great. Firefox crashed. Let's try restarting Firefox. Wow, this is just great. Based. I like to say based when this kind of stuff happens. Because based is not a good adjective. Debased is usually what it means when people claim they are based. Oh, yes, great. The conference is locked, so I'm not even able to get in. Let me unlock that, and we'll refresh here. And we'll get back to this show in just a moment. I do promise you, everyone, this show will be going again in no time flat, if this ever chooses to load. Hope you check out the roundtable we did last night. Very interesting conversation. I started it out talking about, oh, some of the geopolitics and also the Jan Ervin situation. But then we got into a really good conversation about, well, I've got to enter in some stuff here. We got into a conversation about the ancient Aryans. Fascinating topic. Ancient Aryans, yes, and the different migration theories that are out there, and the Polar Eden, very good topic, and so much more. We had some really good callers on that show, so please, as I said, give that a listen. And now, what are we going to be doing is accept this risk from McAfee and try to get on this show. Let's see here. Why is it not letting me even connect in? This is so stupid. Let me exit out of this one. Disconnect me. There we go. And then I'll try to connect into... There we go. Finally, we're going to connect in. I knew it. Oh, is it just going to ring? Click always share from the... Do I have to really click something? Wow, it's not going to let me in. Let me try this one.
Thank you for calling into Renegade Broadcast.
Oh, yes, finally.
Please mute your phone now and only unmute when the host calls on you. You are now joining the show.
This conference is being recorded by the organizer.
Hey, I'm finally back into the conference call.
Oh, here we go.
Apologies, critiqued. Yes.
No problem.
That was an awful little technical nightmare for the listeners to endure. But it looks like I was disconnected at a number of different levels. I don't know exactly what happened there, but we are back. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take out this last break, the 27-minute mark is when it usually comes in. I'm going to take that one out because we lost some time here. And, well, let's get back to it.
I wasn't sure if that was on my end, but that's fine.
I thought it was originally, but no, that was on my end. Okay, so we were discussing a good number of things here. And, of course, the general topic was the dispossession of the Irish people as well as the as white people in general. Now, have you done a lot of outreach just specifically for the Irish people? Or do you see that the way we need to proceed, because we don't have great numbers in our individual countries, is really to network with whites worldwide to really raise the alarm and, well, set up some defenses so that we're not completely overrun?
Yeah, I think we definitely need to network with whites worldwide, because we are all, I see different ethnicities, and you probably do as well, and I love the diversity of peoples in Europe, but to our enemies, we are all the same. Affirmative action does not see ethnicity in white people. So definitely, because of that, we should definitely share ideas. And I get a lot of ideas from when I listen to American people who are fighting this anti-white agenda, which they would be a lot more familiar with than me. And I do hear great talking points when I listen to some of these people, and also with Australians. And that's why, yeah, we should work together like that, definitely. But sometimes I've said before, we can only do so much in our own countries, which is true. We can only do, like, I can only really try and affect change here physically. But as regards sharing ideas and things like that, and fighting it with logic and with reasoning and with debate, yes, we should be working together, I think, definitely, on those things. Without a doubt, yeah. Like that.
Well, there
go without saying, really.
There are always concerned trolls and others that are trying to get people to divide themselves. White people, oh, well, there's no such thing as the white race. There's no white people. There's just the Irish people and the German people. And you can have pride in your ethnicity, but don't identify racially. That's just stupid. That's internationalist. That's collectivist. So don't do that. I've heard many Jews make that argument as well, where they are browbeating white people and saying, you shouldn't even consider yourself white. That's just a social construct of white supremacy, and you can only be proud to be Irish. And, well, the best way to do that is, you know, you could celebrate on St. Paddy's Day and go out and just get absolutely wasted. Now, I wanted to get into the topic of what's keeping the Irish people down, because, well, of course, we've got the indoctrination and things like that. But here in the United States, opioids is a big one. There are other things that are keeping us down, the food we're eating as Americans and other things. But opioids are having a devastating impact, and that's all been done by design. In Britain, as well as here, heroin is a big problem. So they're dealing with the opioids. I don't know if they're taking as many pills as Americans, but I wanted to see what's going on with the Irish. Is booze enough to do it, or is something else being injected into the country now?
There is a lot of opioids in Ireland for sure. Booze was a thing for a long time, but people actually have stopped going to the pubs as much. Now, of course, they still do a lot, but not as much. It's not as much part of the culture as it would have been 20 years ago. Since the smoking ban really came in the early 2000s, that a lot of people have started actually going to the offices and just getting takeaways and having a few drinks at home with friends and stuff like that. And we picked up this tradition as well from people like the Polish, who are the second largest demographic in Ireland after the Irish. I think that's where a lot of that came from. But yeah, I was actually looking at these figures the other day for opioid abuse and methadone stuff and all that, and it was only something like 20,000 people in Ireland are attending these places. So I don't think it's a huge problem. Not a huge problem, but it is a problem. And I always say, like, we are surrounded by sea all around, and our borders should. Why are they so porous to this stuff? Why has it been allowed in here? Really, I blame a lot of that on the border control and the customs and stuff like that, because it should. I know it's easy to sneak it in, right? That is true, but they should clamp down on it more, especially the people who are making huge money off of this stuff at the top level. The guys who don't touch it themselves, driving around in the fancy cars, those guys.
Well, the blame, you know, the blame should obviously go right up the pyramid too, right? Because these decisions aren't just being made in Ireland. This is, and you could argue that it's being done in Brussels, but I wouldn't even put that as the central location. It's a centralized agenda that is unfolding here, and it's being orchestrated from the top on down. This white genocide policy might take on different faces in different countries and use different tactics, but it's the same Hydra rearing its ugly head.
Yeah, it is. And I've seen that in America, there seems to be a huge problem with opioid addiction. It was even one of Donald Trump's main talking points when he's been elected, was to do away with that. And it's just terrible to see it, and other people seem to not touch it as much as white people seem to be more susceptible to this poison for some reason. I don't know why that is at all.
I was speaking with the porous borders and everything, you know, with especially the human trafficking, but with the drug trafficking, well, that's what America has been built on, the CIA especially. That's why Afghanistan has been under American control and been outputting just incredible amounts of poppy, of opioids, coming right from Afghanistan. And this is how they make their money for a lot of their black budget operations. This is the white genocide drug here in America, because it's being handed out and prescribed by the white coats to a lot of middle-class white people, actually all white people, getting hooked on this, and then when they're no longer able to fill their prescriptions, they turn to the street vendors to get their fix. It's all being done by design, and they're making incredible profits off this, the Sackler family in particular. And it's awful. It's having a devastating impact, and a lot of these people, even if they do kick the habit, they're not going to be the same ever after. They're not going to be what they could have possibly been. This forever changes them. And it's just awful to see the zombie youth that result from not just that, but the other things that flood into the country and destroy their brains with long-term use, especially all of the Molly, the MDMA, that has been so heavily pushed and comes right from Israel in most cases. It was big in the club scene that I don't know if Ireland had much of this, but it definitely was big in the United States. But first it was in Britain. So I'm guessing that ecstasy.
We had a lot of ecstasy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's another name for it. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of that here. Like when Britain went through that sort of scene in the 90s, the rave scene or whatever, that came into Ireland as well. And during the late 90s and the 2000s, I used to actually, back in my younger years, I used to DJ at one time. I used to do a lot of things, actually. I've played in bands before as well. But, that scene really gripped the country during those early 2000 years. And that's probably why a lot of people were switched off to the demographic change that was happening at that time. And the crime wave that was coming with it. But, yeah, I don't think that's much of a problem now, the MDMA. I haven't heard of anything like that or people have been caught with it. But the opioids is definitely a thing here as well. I don't understand why they don't just destroy those fields in Afghanistan. Obviously, it's because of the money. As you said, they need the money.
They guard them. They guard them. American troops have been guarding the poppy fields. Yeah. The Taliban had banned the poppy production in Afghanistan, and it went down to almost zero. Afghanistan was exporting almost next to nothing because the ban was effective, and then the next year, the United States invaded. So then things turned around, and it was a big, big, big business. Now, let's perhaps look at some things that could be seen as, well, positives. Is there any kind of cultural revival taking place amongst the Irish people? Apparently, Gaelic has been coming back, and perhaps Irish folk music. Anything else you can point to that indicates that the Irish actually do have a good sense of identity still?
Identity? Not really much that I can point to. Yeah, Gaelic has been revived. Everybody in Ireland has to study Irish. It's compulsory. We study it from the time you start school until you finish. But there's a referendum on abortion that's happening on the 25th of May. And a lot of people see this as it's nearly like the Irish people is versus the political class, because every one of the political parties in Ireland want to bring this in. And the people, I was at a rally yesterday, a pro-life rally in Dublin, and Dublin is very liberal, especially the south side where this rally was. And there was between 3,000 to 5,000 people there, and they were all great, nice. Well, any of the ones I met were very nice people. And that just shows me that they still have their values, a lot of people in Ireland. And I don't think that this is going to be the straight walkover that the political class thinks it's going to be. They think they have this in the bag. Well, I don't think they actually do. And I think this could galvanize the Irish people. I will see this as a victory against globalism. If this is voted against, they're trying to repeal one of the amendments to our constitution, which gives equal rights to the mother and the child. They want to repeal that. And once that is repealed, the government can legislate whatever way they want. They say it'll be only for the first 12 weeks, but we know that England were told the same thing before it was brought in there, and one in five children get aborted there now. So this is a big thing here on the 25th of May. And if that is won, I see that as been a very positive thing. But it's not really to do with our identity. It's more Irish values. And it's not, people would think that it's probably mostly the Catholic Church that is pushing this to not bring this in, but it's actually not. There was not one religious person yesterday that I heard that spoke at this event. They were all just people, and religion was not mentioned. Doctors as well were speaking at it. So this is a big thing. As I said to you earlier, there's 7 referendums planned for the next 2 years, which is ridiculous. And these are referendums that people do not give a damn about, apart from this abortion one. We have another one then coming up in 2018 to try and get rid of this blasphemy law that we have here, which would be a good thing probably, but the blasphemy law has never prosecuted anybody, so it's actually completely irrelevant. And we're having another irrelevant referendum then on whether Ireland should have directly elected Lord Mayors or not. Another thing that's pointless to the people of Ireland. I could go through these. There's 7 of them if you want. Another one is to liberalise Ireland's divorce laws. At the moment, you have to be separated at least 5 years in Ireland before you can start divorce proceedings. And they want to bring this back down to 2 years. I see that as an attack on the family, of course, in an indirect sort of way. And they're going to word it in a way that, oh, no, it's to help people who are... Yeah, but maybe they could, I don't know if they could sort things out or whatever, given them the 4 to 5 years. But that's another referendum that we're going to have to vote in the next 12 months. Another one, this is one that's really bad, is to reduce the voting age to 16. And that is completely to subvert the country because, as you know, like 16-year-olds' minds are so malleable and they're so easily influenced by things. And most of them will have liberal views. I always say this to people that if you can avoid these liberal agendas and not let them get in on you until you're sort of in your mid-20s and more mature, you will be a lot more resilient to them. But that's what reducing the voting age to 16 is all about.
It seems that of these have some way that they relate to the white genocide agenda, the Irish genocide, because that one in particular, who's the next generation there? A lot of them are going to be non-white, because all these people who are coming in are having a lot of children, and the demographics are on the decline for the Irish. So it's like here in the United States, actually, the school-age children, well, overall, white children are in the minority now in school-age children. So what this would do would empower a lot of the non-white people who have moved into Ireland, now invaded, well, they are now going to have a stronger say. And with the other ones as well, abortion, who would be likely getting a lot of these abortions, or who would be pushed towards it? It would be the Irish people themselves. And that's really what's, it seems, is going on here, is that they're putting forward a lot of these different measures to, well, make it all, hammer it all home, cross all the T's and dot the I's to make it all official here. But also, I think this gives people the illusion of having a choice in the matter, when politics is often completely corrupt. And if they aren't outright stealing the vote, they're spending all of the money that they steal from us through their exploitation to indoctrinate people against their own interests and get them to act against their own progeny.
That is exactly what it seems, and that's what it is. That's what a lot of these are. Now, I will say there is one other one, that is to extend voting rights to citizens abroad who are living abroad, anybody that would have an Irish passport. Now, maybe our government are trying to do that to counter the one that is lowering the voting age to 16. You see, a lot of these referendums are these are set up by NGOs. The governments in Ireland, I don't think, really care about half of these things. It's the NGOs that are, there's 420 different NGOs that work out of Ireland, doing all sorts of things to try and subvert the country, to from bringing in migrants to organising these referendums and pushing abortion. Like, it's illegal to even fund a referendum in Ireland from a foreign country, but George Soros was found out to be funding Amnesty Ireland, who are pro bringing in this abortion. Amnesty, imagine, like, are pro-abortion, which is crazy. And they didn't give the money back. They were found out to be taking something like 140,000 off of Open Societies Foundation. That's all we know about. I would say there's tons of these backhanders going on that nobody knows about. But then, no, they didn't give the money back. And nothing happened to them, even though it's completely illegal to do that here. This is all part of, it's all ramping up the same agenda, to disenfranchise the native people and to give more rights to these other people, and put it in, frame it in a way that we're being equal. It's equality and it's humanity, and we have to be nice to everybody. And everybody is global citizens. We're not citizens of countries anymore. We're citizens of the world. Such nonsense. Like, if that was the case, like, citizens of the world, you would have everybody coming from any country that has a low GDP would be coming to all of the countries that have high GDP, and that just cannot last. That's going to break these countries,
and it won't actually help any of the people who are supposed to be helped by it. And it would kill the goose that laid the golden egg for all of these people, to be honest, because there'd be no longer anybody there to subsidize them.
That is it. And plus, all the intelligent people or the educated people, the so-called educated people from these places, are leaving it. So, like, there'll be nobody there, only the low IQ people. And that's not good for any country. Like, so it's not helping anybody in the long run. It's overburdening us, and it's taking what they call the good people out of these places. But, as regards something positive to do with Irish identity, no, the only positive thing really recently was the vote in Listenvarna. When I seen that 93% of the population of that town did not want this, it just made me realise that the people of Ireland are sort of awake to this. They just do not want to say it out. Not yet.
All right.
But I think a time will come when they will have no choice in the matter.
Here's the real litmus test, okay? How do they feel about Bono? Because if Irish people still actually like Bono at all, I don't know if there's any hope.
Same here. No, well, I have no nice feelings towards Bono. He's an absolute globalist shill, and he pushes these global agendas constantly. No, he's a waste of time, and I used to think U2 had good tunes from that years ago, but no, I wouldn't even listen to them now because of his how politicized he is and how he's always involved with all these different globalist agendas. And it's always shrouded in the thing of, oh, I'm trying to help this and I'm trying to help that. But I don't see, he doesn't give much of his own money towards these things. He asks other people to donate to this and donate to that. Now, maybe they do give a certain amount, but I don't know. He's not leaving himself stuck in any way, obviously. No, they don't even pay their taxes in Ireland, U2, the past 12 or 15 years. And they had a row over that. They don't even pay their taxes in Ireland, but still they will preach. Bono himself will preach to the people that we should do this and we should do that. No, I've absolutely no time for him. And a lot of Irish people don't like him, actually, to be honest about that. A lot of people don't.
That's good. Now, what about some of the old bad blood that existed between the Irish and the English, and of course, the whole Northern Ireland situation? Is that still within the consciousness of a lot of the Irish people, or is that kind of water under the bridge at this point?
Well, the way I see it would be the English and the Irish have more important things to be concerning ourselves now with now than having this thing that's gone on for the past hundreds of years. Of course, Ireland is still occupied in the north, and to the people who live up there, I'm not sure. Some of them would probably say it's water under the bridge, and some of them wouldn't. It's a mixed bag. But the Brexit thing has really sort of reignited some of this, because one of the parties in Northern Ireland, the one that's in the coalition with the British government, wants to leave the EU and be part of Brexit, which is fair enough. They won't mind if they put it back in. If they put back in a border between Northern Ireland and the South, and I think that wouldn't be good at all if that happened, because it's the peace process that's gone on since 1998 has been successful, and I don't think anything should be changed that may jeopardize that. Nothing, even putting in this border or whatever. So there's a few different things there that are conflicting. I admire the British people for leaving the EU, of course I do, and more power to them. I hope they get their Brexit, I really do, but it's the way that the EU can manipulate this and manipulate Ireland and sort of say and drag up this old history and say that if they leave and if Northern Ireland stays with them, and it's going to put a hard border back into the north and things like that, and that's not good. So the best thing, I don't know, and then there's of course Sinn Féin are saying that they want a united Ireland. That's the best thing for Ireland, if we have a unified Ireland and the north comes back to the republic. But as regards to troubles, it would be mostly water under the bridge, because the issues that caused those troubles, such as the Catholics not being allowed to vote unless they own the land and all these different things, they weren't allowed to join the peace. These are all more or less sorted out to a great degree. They're not being discriminated the way they were. So a lot of it is water under the bridge in that sense.
Now, what would it matter if Ireland was united, if its original inhabitants, the indigenous Irish, have been ethnically cleansed? What does it matter if it's united? And I think a lot of these issues, the wedge issues that people will debate endlessly and do seem important in many instances, well, they just cause people to fight amongst each other on things that really are not the root cause of our problems. They're just symptoms of it, like abortion. People wouldn't be wanting abortions if we were living in a healthier, sane world, where we weren't being targeted by basically everything and everyone. As soon as we're born into this world with all of the media mind manipulation, all the indoctrination at school, the toxic food, the toxic air, the toxic water, if we actually were living in a healthy world, we took care of those issues and the people that are doing it to us, well, abortion wouldn't even be an issue. So they always want us just dealing with the symptoms rather than getting down to the root cause.
Yeah, they definitely do. And a lot of these things are just distractions from the root cause, as you say. and this talk about a unified Ireland, you're dead right. It makes absolutely no difference if it's not the Irish people who live here. And it will not be Ireland. It will be, I don't know, it'll probably have the same name, but it won't be the same place. But definitely won't be the same people if these globalists have their way. But yeah, so issues like this are just distractions, I see them as. As far as I would be concerned, Northern Ireland is peaceful now, relative compared to what it was, and that's the way it should be left and kept. It's up to the people who live there if whether they want to rejoin the Republic or not. It's up to those people, because it would be nice, like, I have to say that, if they did, but it's up to them, so I can't say, but I would say I would like to see it happen, but it's not to be an end all of everything. It's just a side little issue. Really, we have bigger fish to fry, both the British people and the Irish people, which are these people who are trying to destroy our countries with invaders, with these low IQ non-whites, and trying to dilute our populations and replace our peoples. This is the number one issue for me. Anything else is just second.
Yeah, Heathen Vegan is bringing up in the chat, the modern IRA are commie subversives and have been for a long time. And yes, when National Action was doing a demonstration in the UK, what was it, Liverpool? You had IRA traveling over to oppose them for this demonstration alongside all of the other assorted Reds. And he says it's kind of like the Scottish Nationalist Party, which is not nationalist whatsoever, because they're for bringing in all of these non-whites into their country. So it's all a big deception. It's a kind of controlled opposition setup where you think you're actually you're given an alternative, but the end result is still the same thing. And it's your dispossession, your eventual genocide. And that's not acceptable. That our genocide should not be up for debate or for vote.
I agree. 100%. And this is the number one issue. That's what it is. And I don't see really the North has been a big issue now. But we should be concentrating on what's happening in front of us, in our towns, even in my town, which is a small town. It's amazing the amount of different people that I have seen. I walked down the town last Saturday, and I've seen all these new faces, and I know people who work in the shops around the place, and some people like that, and they've told me that the amount of new people they're seeing is unbelievable. But so I just asked these three different people just what time it was, and not one of them could speak English, not one. And this, to me, is something that is in front of your face. It's happening here. Don't mind these talks that are going on about things that don't count, like Northern Ireland or whatever, this and that. Like, things are peaceful there, and that's the way it should be left at the moment, unless those people want to change it. So the number one thing is our invasion and our ethnocide, which is a small part of white genocide. I always look at South Africa and I just think to myself, will it ever come to that? And it's probably possible that it could eventually, if it's not curtailed in any way, if it's left keep going like this. As you said, and you're right, these people come and a lot of them gloat, the globalists do, but a lot of the non-whites do as well. And they say to you, yeah, you're going to become a minority in such a time, and we're here to take over. I've heard them saying in England as well. And it's just disgusting that our political class are allowing this.
South Africa is the model nation for the rainbow nation, the white genocide model, where white people still are discriminated against, even though they're the minority. There's affirmative action against white people there as well, even though they're a small minority of the population. So you can expect that as the tide turns, if we allow the tide to turn, that will be what happens to us in our own lands as well. Yes, this rainbow that they put out there is just a big facade behind which they can commit their crimes. And this includes the homosexual rainbow flag. And I know that in Ireland, they basically embrace the rainbow with a homosexual marriage. That was one of the big wedge issues that they would always use here in America as well. And we know the way that the tide ended up turning with that one. But the rainbow is just the pretty PR face that they give, because behind the scenes, what that really represents, as we've been coming to find out for many years now, is the trafficking of children. And that is just enabled by all of these anti-hate and love beyond age type campaigns. And they've been trying to normalize pedophilia for quite some time now. And they're doing so in ever, and by pedophilia, excuse me, I mean child rape. They've been doing so in ever more aggressive ways. And so this is just another example of how they will hide their true intentions behind this happy, smiley face, all rainbow and sunshine and unicorns.
Yeah, they do. And it looks lovely, this rainbow color, but it, the agenda behind it is really sinister. And I wasn't happy that we voted to give gay marriage the same equality as a heterosexual couple who can produce children. It's ridiculous that they have the same status as that. It's an attack on the nuclear family, of course. That's what it is as well. I know Ireland seemed very liberal when it came to that referendum, because of course there are people here like who would have voted in that, who maybe have a gay cousin or know somebody who has a gay uncle, and a lot of women and mothers would have voted in that. But I think this next referendum that's coming up will show a different side of the Irish people, where we're not going to be duped into this just because of the equality or the happy faces that they're putting out.
No, they only really ever offer two extreme positions, which is that there shall never be an abortion ever, or that you should be able to have abortions even after a child's born. And that's pretty much the way that they frame it, when your position could be more nuanced. And that's the case with all of politics, because in certain instances, perhaps abortion would be the best decision, especially in the case of a rape. And definitely. And so that's something that, you know, really people don't talk about, because it's always this polarized politics. And hopefully we can cut through that. But we have come out on the other end of this show with almost no time. So please do promote your YouTube channel. Let us know if you've got anything coming up and any final thoughts for the night.
My YouTube channel is just Critiqued. If you type in Critiqued, it should come up. And I have the same channel on Minds. It's Critiqued. And on Gab, it's at Critiqued 101, because Critiqued is gone. And on Twitter, it's at Critiqued 101. And that's where you can find me. I will be putting up videos regularly.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining me here.
Thanks for listening.
Take care.
No problem.
Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to the supporters. Talk to you all again soon. Stay tuned to the network. Much more to come.
On hard times, need cash, sick of waiting tables? Here at the Juilliard School of Drama, we can make all your hopes and dreams come true. Sign up for our 33-week course and we will teach you how to laugh mid-sentence when describing how your friend was blown into 6 million pieces, how to move too soon before any shots or explosions are even heard, the lost art of driving into people but having your truck stay nice and clean, the correct posture when crouching over a dummy so your ID card doesn't cause neck strain. Sign up today and we guarantee weekly acting jobs with the CIA, FEMA, MI5, even Mossad! Scholarships and bursaries available for war veteran amputees and illegal immigrants. Juilliard School of Drama. We even supply the tomato sauce and dead chickens.